This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
This is a special edition of America Changed Forever, Capital in Crisis, from the CBS Audio Network. I'm Gil Gross. The United States Capitol survived many things in the past, well, being burned down, for one, when the British sacked it in 1814, but bombings, shootings, but still, nothing quite like what we saw this past week.
The U.S. Capitol has been placed on lockdown as angry protesters surround the building.
Then if you look up here onto the inauguration stage, you can see there's a large number of people. We've watched
them. Republican Kevin McCarthy confirmed just a few minutes ago that shots have been fired inside the Capitol.
Reporters and lawmakers alike were barricading themselves in various rooms and offices and hideaways.
Steve Dorsey is a CBS News correspondent who was in the Capitol this week when it was overrun. Steve, how are you? And I actually mean that in this case. It's not just something to say politely. How are you?
You know, physically, I'm safe, but emotionally, I am living in a surreal world like the rest of this country.
Let's take you to where you were when this happened and when you first knew that something was amiss.
Well, I was working in what we call the House Radio and TV Correspondents Gallery. So this is the House side, third floor. It's about 20 feet from my booth to the entrance through the hall, the marble hall, into the balconies that you see in the House chamber. And I was continuing my work covering this joint session of Congress when about an hour into it, I heard shouting in the hallway. And I peeked my head out of the door and I saw police, Capitol Police, running through the hall. And they were quickly locking each door to the House chamber. And when they saw me, they said, "Get back in, secure the door, close the door now." So I closed the door, and I heard, along with the rest of the reporters in that workspace and the Congressional Press Gallery staff, commotion outside just that wooden door, that heavy wooden door that separated us. And we heard the chants of protesters echoing through the halls as they were entering the building. USA, USA, they were shouting. And then we could feel them. We could hear them get closer. And then we heard a lot of clashes with police. We heard police yelling. We heard radios going off. And then ultimately, it was a bit of silence. And we looked out the window, which casts out over the West Front, the mall, seeing the Washington Monument in the distance, and then the Lincoln Memorial, and see these thousands of protesters, and they're swarming and climbing up the structure that they had built for the inauguration in just a couple weeks. And that's where a lot of protesters had entered the building and forced their way in through windows and broken doors. And then there was some silence on the floor where we were located. Everything was locked. There's an announcement that says, "Please stay. Do not open the door. Do not leave." And then a thump, 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 thump on the door as people outside told us to open it up. And at that point, we didn't know whether they were protesters or police. And then they said, Capitol Police, open it up. And the thumping got harder. And the director of the press gallery came over. She peeked through the door and saw these two police officers who told us they were evacuating us and to quickly gather whatever we could. And we had to leave immediately. They took us through the corridors underneath the Capitol, those tunnels, those escalators that we see, and those reporter stakeouts of senators and members of the House. And we entered through a guarded area into an undisclosed location. They put us in a workspace in the Rayburn office building. And we stayed there for a few hours until we were told by police we could re-enter the Capitol. And it was a surreal moment because it was like the Allies had recaptured enemy territory. You know, we had to show our press ID. People were calm. There wasn't this tension that was there, but it was starting to set in about what had just happened over the last few hours. And then we got back to work covering Congress.
When you heard the chanting in the hallways and realized that the Capitol itself had security had been breached, I mean, what went through your mind?
Disbelief. Really, because I myself, as a working reporter, had to go through several layers of new security because we knew protests were happening. Already roads were closed. So I had to show my congressional press pass through several layers of police. I had to go through a TSA style checkpoint. And then in just a moment, all these protesters made their way into the House. We heard them. And then we saw from the Senate side protesters take control of the Senate chamber, enter the podium. We heard these reports of gunfire going on in the House. We don't know if they were armed. Who was shooting? We don't know if there was an active shooter situation going on. So that was, I think, the tense moment when all of us realized how important of a story this had become.
When you were evacuated over in Rayburn, did you see any members of Congress?
No. And that's because at that point, all the lawmakers had been evacuated to other locations, not just in the building that we were in, but also in the basements of other buildings, including Longworth and over in the Senate side, Russell. As police tried to evacuate, it seemed like room by room, methodically knocking on all these doors, looking for any protesters they might have missed. That way they could clear the building and then organize everyone to come back and resume this joint session of Congress.
And do we know yet why everybody, because it was one of the shocking things to law enforcement officers who were watching it around the country and who I've talked to, was the fact that people were just the people who had come into the Capitol illegally were allowed to just leave instead of, you know, being arrested within the Capitol, the people in the rotunda not being forced to, you know, lie down, wait to be cuffed. How much of a shock was that? And what were people on Capitol Hill saying about this?
Well, clearly, from my vantage point, especially looking out onto the crowd that was assembled below me of protesters, they had outnumbered Capitol Police. And that was probably one reason why they managed to get into the Capitol. Now, perhaps because why they weren't arrested or there wasn't mass arrests was because Capitol Police were so focused on evacuating the vice president, the House Speaker, the Senate Majority Leader, this group of people in the line of succession for president, and then ultimately evacuating everyone else to safety before they could regain control of the Capitol and then even arrest anyone to begin with.
You know, when we were able to watch those sessions of the House and Senate on television later, it almost looked, you know, kind of normal, despite what we knew happened that day. But as you were able to walk through the building, both when you came back and the day after, did you notice anything that you know, seemed like remnants of what had happened?
Well, of course. When I left the Capitol, I saw New Jersey Congressman Andy Kim himself at 1 o'clock in the morning in the Capitol, in the bowels of the Capitol, picking up trash that was left in the wreckage. And just a few feet away from him was a broken window that had been boarded up, glass still on the floor. The trashed furniture that was used to break in was still laying on the floor. It was kind of shocking because Congress was already in session for hours at that point. And I had thought it had all been cleaned up. And then when I got there, when I saw firsthand how much destruction there still was, and then the cleaning crews, and then this congressman working to try his part to clean up Congress. It was really a sobering moment.
You know, one of the things I haven't heard much about is because Congress was so busy with certifying the Electoral College vote, was that, you know, you have the Senate Intelligence Committee, you have the House Intelligence Committee, you have many committees and many members of Congress dealing with classified information. Most of that is put away safely, but if you're not expecting the Capitol to be breached, and whether it's a staff member or a member of Congress, you know, sitting at their desk reading something or with the computer on looking at something, I just wonder about the national security dangers to what happened this week.
You know, that's a good point, because remember these photos that we see of these trashed offices, papers everywhere, documents laying on the floor. How much of that was sensitive information? Did they take anything? Did they take computers, for instance? You know, who knows what exactly transpired? It was a breach of national security in all senses, but perhaps it could have been a breach of national intelligence as well.
Steve Dorsey is CBS News radio correspondent who was in the Capitol when it was overrun this week. Steve, glad you're all right. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Gil.
You're listening to a special edition of America Changed Forever, Capitol in Crisis, from the CBS Audio Network. Welcome back to a special edition of America Changed Forever, Capitol in Crisis, from the CBS Audio Network. I'm Gil Gross. The events this week in Washington were unlike any in our lifetime. Let's talk more about that. Margaret Brennan is moderator of Face the Nation of CBS News and the network's senior foreign affairs correspondent, and previously a White House correspondent for CBS. You broke the story, Margaret, that cabinet secretaries in President Trump's administration were discussing invoking the 25th Amendment to remove him from office. What do we know about that?
These are officials at the highest level of the Trump administration, senior administration officials who have been talking about this possibility that after the events that occurred in the U.S. Capitol, that it had a profound effect on them and their thinking and their concern about the president and his ability to continue leading. Some Republican congressional leaders have said that they'd be open to it. That doesn't necessarily mean there's actually a process underway, but this would be one way to get the president to leave office before January 20th and for Vice President Mike Pence to step into the role for that limited period of time.
Without going into the complex legal machinations of the 25th Amendment, you need a majority of the cabinet and, of course, the vice president to go along with this. And even then, the president can object. If he does, after that, the vice president can run things for 4 days, and then Congress has time to act. Then you need two-thirds of both houses. It sounds like something that's almost too complex to get done in the little bit of remaining time of this administration.
That may be well the case. Same thing with impeachment, right? These kind of ways of Congress trying to force the hand or the cabinet members who are concerned trying to force a change. From what I understand, what happens and in the coming days will also continue to have an impact on people's understanding of just whether the president can continue to serve in a way that they feel confident in for the next 2 weeks. That is to say, this upset isn't just about what happened. It's the president's own behavior, his thinking, the inability to influence him. There aren't a lot of top advisors that the president listens to right now. And so that concern, particularly from a national security perspective, is what has led to these extraordinary conversations. But as you are pointing out, the fact that the conversations are taking place doesn't mean they will result in an actual invocation of the 25th Amendment. But it is extraordinary that the conversations being had in the first place, and that the need potentially is being felt by top advisors to the president. These aren't Democrats. These are allies of the president who are concerned about what happened and what may happen. And so there are a lot of moving parts in a dynamic situation.
Very dynamic situation. You had the inauguration coming up. It was going to be scaled back anyhow, but that was because of COVID. You were a White House correspondent. I have sat anchoring those inaugurations over the years. We never worried much about security at these events. This would therefore be very, very different.
There have always been concern about some security threats from a foreign actor in particular, but never this kind of dual threat. Remember, we're also in the midst of a pandemic, and we've already had the Biden team warn that they don't think they can safely put on some of the orchestration that is typical of an inauguration because of the health risks to putting people together at the peak of a pandemic when we are looking at a strain of the virus that is more contagious than ever. And now you have this as well, this overlay of concern about a domestic bad actor. It is deeply concerning. It's why Mayor Bowser, the mayor of Washington, D.C., has put in place some security measures for at least the next 2 weeks to get us through the inauguration. And we know that Washington, D.C. police in this federal city said, there was only one local resident among the 60 odd people that were arrested for their behavior and staging that siege. And so you were looking around and seeing that there are people who came here with an intent, and exactly what that intent was or maybe whether they've gone home, whether they continue to pose a threat is an open question.
Let me go to your other field of expertise, which is foreign affairs, as the network's senior foreign affairs correspondent. Let's talk about some of the reaction overseas. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said she's furious, and Boris Johnson, who is very closely attached to Trump, says that Trump encouraged, and quoting, encouraged people to storm the Capitol insofar as the president consistently has cast doubt on the outcome of a free and fair election. I believe that he was completely wrong. This kind of stuff coming from his friends is quite a blow to American standing overseas.
It is a blow to American standing. General Jim Mattis, retired General Jim Mattis, the former defense secretary, often said, that America has the power of intimidation and inspiration. And he has worried for some time we are losing the ability to inspire. And when that may sound a bit soft, but I think that really gets at the heart of what we think of ourselves as being as Americans, as a beacon of democracy, as the world's most powerful democracy, as an example setter to the rest of the world. We claim a moral authority. And that's what was interesting for me when I was talking to State Department officials on how they're explaining this to allies and to adversaries around the world, and what they're telling diplomats who have to represent all of us Americans overseas right now. To that very question of has America lost its moral authority to lecture other countries on how they carry out their elections? And what they come back to is this idea that the institutions of our democracy have continued to function. Even though the president may be throwing sand in those gears, it took until 4 a.m, overnight, but members of the Senate, members of Congress, the vice president himself, who had, been in a direct line of threat at one point earlier in the day, returned to make sure that the certification took place. This kind of ceremonial process that we've barely covered as a news event in the past, but is viewed as not just constitutionally required, but necessary as a signal to the rest of the country, to the rest of the world, that American democracy is continuing and that there will be a peaceful transfer of power on January 20th. Our hope is that it remains peaceful, but our diplomats and the people who represent America around the world are trying to explain that to other countries, that democracy can be really messy, but it's still alive.
One of the things that Joseph Biden is hoping to do as president is renegotiate a nuclear pact with Iran. President Trump tore up the one we had that prevented Iran from having nuclear weapons for 15 years. Now there's basically nothing. Recently, they raised the enrichment rate of their nuclear materials to 20%, which can be easily made into more than 90 in a matter of weeks if they choose. Probably the beginning of negotiations with the Biden administration. But just for the people of Iran, they have elections this year. They have to choose between the people who are in power now who want to do a deal with the United States with more radical people who are saying the United States is not reliable, A, because they tore up a pact, but B can now also say, look at the United States. I mean, this is not a reliable partner for a deal. How might this affect the United States in making pacts and being seen as a reliable partner overseas?
America's reliability has been thrown into question for the past 4 years with the withdrawal from a number of different alliances and international agreements. Joe Biden as a candidate promised to rejoin most of those accords. Joe Biden as president may face more difficulty in executing on some of that because the world has changed in the past 4 years. So for those who hope it's just hitting sort of refresh on the screen and going back to the Obama administration policies, they may face a very different reality when they get into those national security positions, that it's a different problem set. Same adversaries, different problem set in some ways. So it's going to be more complicated than just rejoining the so-called JCPOA, that nuclear deal with Iran. There is a broader set of challenges, and there's also threats around the world. I mean, North Korea continues to be an actual nuclear power, not a potential one like Iran, which has even refuted that it's developing nuclear weapons and in the early stages of a nuclear program. North Korea actually has weaponry and has been, you know, really developing throughout the Trump administration, despite the fact that they were engaging in diplomatic talks. There are threats around the world. That is standard for commander-in-chief to walk into a lot of that. But there's this bigger, broader question that really was raised even before President Trump of exactly what does America want to be in the world these days? And how much do we really want to withdraw? And when will we use our military to uphold moral principles? We didn't in Syria during the Obama administration. Did we in the Trump administration? Where are our lines? I think that's a bigger, broader question for the American people right now. And for the rest of the world, they may well be asking, well, why would we want America to lead us? So this is that bigger, broader question of who is America and what do we want to be and how do we use that influence? And if we're not going to use intimidation, how do we get back the power of inspiration, as General Mattis phrased it?
You will hear more about all of this, of course, on Face the Nation from Margaret Brennan, who's also the network's senior foreign affairs correspondent. Margaret, I thank you so much for spending the time with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to a special edition of America Changed Forever, Capital in Crisis, from the CBS Audio Network.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to this special edition of America Changed Forever, Capital in Crisis, from the CBS Audio Network. I'm Gil Gross. This week we saw something that was almost impossible to imagine. The United States Capitol overrun with people walking out with parts of the Capitol building and pieces of the Senate and House seemingly unimpeded by Capitol Police. Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton is the delegate from the District of Columbia who, because of its unique status, cannot vote but serves on committees and can introduce legislation. And it's a pleasure to have you with us. How are you?
My pleasure. I'm good.
Good. This week marked your 31st year in Congress. Have you ever seen anything like this?
I think I can say not only have I not seen anything like this, I'm not sure there's ever been anything like this in the more than 200 years that there's been a Congress of the United States.
Well, I heard Mayor Muriel Bowser say that when she called Capitol Police earlier last week to see what preparations they had made for this week, they assured her they had something, but they would not share it with her. How does that make you feel?
Well, that makes me understand why there was an insurrection that occurred in the Capitol with Capitol Police totally unprepared, and there was no reason they should have been caught unawares. The president himself was the leader of the pack. Go wild, he said. And for several days running, he had urged people to come to the Capitol to do precisely what they did. The Capitol Police were caught flat-footed and had arranged for nothing. And remember, we closed the Capitol at the State of the Union. We closed it at inauguration. Now, I'm sure Capitol Police were reluctant to go to the House and Senate leaders to say close the Capitol. But as they clean up the Capitol, sure, they wish they had.
When Black Lives Matter protesters came to Washington, D.C. last summer, there were police in riot gear everywhere. Then Secretary of Defense Mark Esper said, we need to dominate the battle space, and asking dozens of governors to send their National Guard forces to the Capitol. Why do you think this was different?
Yeah, the Capitol Police in particular have been on guard for Black Lives Matter, even though they have caused very little in the way of violence in our city. Why they would have made a difference between this and demonstrations and these demonstrations, it seems to me, can only be said to be that these demonstrations were being egged on by the President of the United States. That was the big difference here.
You are, as I introduced you at the top, and as you've been introduced for three decades now, a congresswoman with no voting rights, because D.C. is not a state, even though it has more population than Wyoming or Vermont, which both have two senators and a voting member of Congress. One of the things that seemed to have played into what happened this week was the inability of the mayor to call out the National Guard. That was a major factor in this international embarrassment because of the time it takes to get anything done like that with D.C. as it go through various steps from sergeants at arms to the Secretary of the Army and then into the White House. Does this incident and now the Democratic takeover of the Senate augur well possibly for D.C. statehood?
It augurs well for D.C. statehood. And by the way, you don't even need statehood for the mayor to get control of the D.C. National Guard. I have a bill that I think could now pass the House and the Senate. That's simply a home rule bill. But the fact that we now control the House, the Senate, and the presidency does set us light years ahead for D.C. statehood. We were able to get the first D.C. statehood bill ever in June, and already we now have control of the Senate. Any bill in this Congress, or most Congresses, has trouble getting through. But we certainly have moved rapidly when you consider the 219 years it took us to get here in the first place.
You serve on the United States House Committee on Oversight and Reform. Might that be a venue for an investigation of what happened this past week?
There will be an investigation by our committee, and I'm a senior member of that committee. But I think we need much more than what I think you will see, which is multiple investigations by House and Senate committees. I believe we need a presidential commission. I believe what happened on Wednesday night rises to the level that caused us to set up the 9/11 commission. When we were invaded from outside, we were now invaded from inside. We need to take that just as seriously, and we need a presidential commission. I'm calling for the president to appoint such a commission.
Final thing, Congresswoman, you go back to work at the Capitol. We've seen a week where people wearing shirts and cards with racist messages got into the Capitol building, where temporarily somebody put up a gallows west of the Capitol. You saw what happened when people broke in, the Capitol Police unable to protect members of Congress. Are you going to feel safe going back in that building?
Oh, yeah. And because of the failures, you're going to see people on guard in a way you've never seen them before. That's why we need a presidential commission, because that's not good enough. We need to find out exactly what went wrong and exactly what needs to be done to keep this from happening again.
Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton is the delegate from the District of Columbia. Congresswoman, I thank you for spending the time with us.
My pleasure.
You're listening to a special edition of America Changed Forever, Capital in Crisis, from the CBS Audio Network.
This is a special edition of America Changed Forever, Capital in Crisis, from the CBS Audio Network. I'm Gil Gross. There are, of course, political aspects to what happened this week at the Capitol, both for the future of the GOP and the incoming Biden administration. Here to discuss that is Jamal Simmons, a CBS News contributor who, among other issues, analyzed Democratic Party strategies during this election, and Rich Galen, a columnist and Republican strategist and former press secretary to Vice President Dan Quayle and then Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. And Jamal, let's start with you.
Yeah, we saw something that was really about the most disturbing thing we could all witness, which was a bunch of insurrectionists going up into the Capitol. The two images that are very burnt into my mind, one is the man walking around with a Confederate flag. As a friend of mine said, the Confederates, it took them, 100 years plus, but they finally taken the Capitol, 150 years. The other one was the image of the protesters or the rioters or the insurrectionists trying to take down the American flag and raise a Trump flag. I think if there was ever a thought that these people were patriots or they were, disaffected, Republicans, they're not. They are Trumpistas who are willing to literally take down the American government, the legislature, in order to support a renegade wannabe tyrant who can't figure out how to pull it off.
Rich Galen, what was the day like for you?
I first noticed what was going on social media, and I looked at some of the still photography and some of the handheld photography. And frankly, I thought it was either Iraq or Ukraine or photoshopped because I couldn't believe what I was looking at. The image that I got was of a tsunami. Remember that footage of the New Year's Day tsunami in Southeast Asia, where the water just kind of came in? It looked like it was slow motion, but it just ran over everything. And that's what the crowd going into the Capitol looked like to me. There was people said, "Well, why didn't the magnetometers stop them?" Well, they just didn't pay attention to it. They just overwhelmed the cops, ignored the security activity, and just went wherever they wanted to go. And it was just breathtaking.
Let's talk about the politics ahead and where we are. I mean, one of the stories of 2021 was supposed to be the Democratic Party and a split between moderates and progressives.
Well, it's a great point, and it's another example of why conventional wisdom is always wrong. Until about a week or week and a half ago, all the chatter was, how will Biden deal with his progressive left? How far left will they try to drag him? And then suddenly, there is no left to be dragged to, because the center of gravity of the United States has shifted from slightly to the right of straight up and down to slightly to the left of straight up and down. And as you point out properly, there is a schism, not just a split, but it's the Grand Canyon. And classic conservatives are on one side, and Trump Republicans are on the other side, which can only mean that the Democrats, if they play their cards right, they can control the political future of the nation for decades to come, because Republicans, until Trump is no longer on the scene, Republicans will have an impossible task of trying to make believe he doesn't exist.
Jamal Simmons, what do you think is the future of the GOP?
Well, there are two things that one could wonder. One is this just the burgeoning of the new GOP? And does this force, this Trump force, is it really going to be what controls the Republican Party going forward? And so we're just going to have a nationalist party that is rooted in white supremacy, and a very open white supremacy, be the other party in the United States. And then you have kind of this coalition party of the Democrats, which sounds an awful lot to me like South Africa, where, you have one multiracial coalition party, the ANC, and then, kind of a white nationalist set of parties that sit outside of it, which is not good for democracy, is not good for the future of the country. You need principled conservatives who are offering conservative ideas to put forward, and then have a discussion about liberal ideas versus conservative ideas, and let's figure out which one is the best one, or how do we rule the day.
Well, let's take a look at what's happened, because we've known for a while that there's been a tension between the classical conservatives of the Reagan-Gingrich mold and followers of President Trump. That was demonstrated dramatically this week. Let's break this into some bite-sized chunks and start with the people who sacked the Capitol. How representative do you think they are of a party that is that committed to a single person, President Trump?
Well, that's the nature of a cult, isn't it? That no matter what, and I've got really good friends. I mean, these are people that are well respected. Some are lawyers, and they truly believe that the election was stolen from Donald Trump. And no matter what you say, they explain it away, or they just say that they don't believe it, that I'm lying to them about it. And that's the nature of a cult. I mean, the whole nature of religion is you have to take things on faith because you can't prove it. And with a cult, the things that you have to take on faith can sometimes be devastating, not just to you, but to your family and to your culture.
So it seems that you have some old line conservatives, say, you know, conservatives from the Bush years and people like that. And now this group that is devoted to Trump, where the Republican Party is completely bifurcated.
That's a very astute observation. I think when you add into that these Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, who are vying for leadership of this coalition, I think we're looking at, there will be future Trumpists who are more able to navigate power and are more reasonable and won't be doing all this sort of weird Twitter things that Donald Trump did. And the question is, will we sign up as a country? Will we sign up for a Josh Hawley led, you know, nationalist coalition or nationalist movement to take over the country again? If Mitch McConnell and the Republicans don't try to find a way to solve American problems with conservative ideas that they can push into the Biden administration, and the Biden people are willing to sort of wrestle with them, I think all the institutions, the traditional institutions of American power, are at stake.
One of the things that we saw during what was supposed to be, you know, the little more interesting than usual, but still fairly dull certification of the Electoral College process, was Mitch McConnell, who has ruled the Senate with a pretty iron grip, and now will be Senate Minority Leader, trying to get control of many members of his party in that Electoral College certification, got some back because of what happened to the Capitol attack, but you saw Josh Hawley, you saw Ted Cruz pretty much brush McConnell aside, which brings up the question of the future effectiveness of the Republican Party during these early Biden years when the Democrats have a majority in the House and Senate, and what this means for the GOP. Rich?
There's nothing worse than being the leader of the minority when the opposition has the presidency and both chambers of Congress. I mean, you have to go back a long way before you find somebody that, you know, some group, even if you do have a majority, it's difficult if you don't have the presidency. I mean, I was in Washington when Bill Clinton was president, and Haley Barbour was chairman of the Republican National Committee, and he was surrounded by Bob Dole in the Senate and Newt Gingrich in the House, and they had a tough time getting anything done.
Rich Galen, Jamal Simmons, thank you both.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
As they say with the old Irish toast, may we live in interesting times.
You're listening to America Change Forever from the CBS Audio Network.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Every day, our world gets a little more connected, but a little further apart. But then, there are moments that remind us to be more human.
Thank you for calling Amica Insurance.
Hey, I was just in an accident.
Don't worry, we'll get you taken care of.
At Amica, we understand that looking out for each other isn't new or groundbreaking. It's human. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
Welcome back to a special edition of America Changed Forever, Capital in Crisis, from the CBS Audio Network. I'm Gil Gross. Votes are cast for the next president of the United States every 4 years on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. But the new president, of course, does not take office until January 20th. During those weeks, the administration of the president-elect and that of the sitting president are required by law to meet in order to facilitate a peaceful and efficient transfer of power. Some administrations have done a great job preparing the next administration to take office, and others, not so much. As you can tell from the events of the past week, this one's been a real problem. Peter Mayer served as White House correspondent for CBS News for 17 years, has been an eyewitness to multiple presidential transitions. And Peter, thank you for being here. How are you doing?
Well, great to be with you, Gil.
So even before the siege of the Capitol by disgruntled Trump supporters, this transition from the Trump administration to that of President-elect Biden is unlike any other in our lifetime. Where do you place this in your experience looking at the White House?
Well, you know, I witnessed them from Carter, from Jimmy Carter all the way through Barack Obama. And this one has to be at the bottom of the list when it comes to lack of cooperation. The Trump side, I think, deserves a failing grade, Gil, for first ignoring the need to cooperate and then doing so so entirely grudgingly. I suppose the most concerning thing is the reported initial lack of cooperation by the defense and the intelligence sectors. It almost goes without saying the importance of those two areas of our government. The Biden people really needed to be brought up to speed on any pressing issues of concern in the Pentagon and the CIA and the whole long list of other, the alphabet of other intelligence agencies. There are things going on that we don't know anything about for obvious reasons. And the people in the Biden on the Biden team really needed to be brought up to speed. And there was just a lot of reported foot dragging on the Pentagon side of the Trump people.
Of course, we've had troubled transitions before, and in fact, some, at least one in particular, because of a disputed election result. When Al Gore contested the Florida results back in 2000, the administration of George W. Bush was constrained from the beginning in its preparations to take over the reins of power. How did they deal with that, and what effect did that interregnum shortened by lawsuits have in the early days of the Bush administration?
Wow. You know, you're talking about Florida and hanging chads and that whole long, drawn-out ordeal, Gil. Bush did receive classified briefings. Al Gore was already getting them as vice president at the time. But as we look back at history, Gil, I recall that the 9/11 Commission would find that this slow transition really hurt the new administration's ability to put their top officials in national security roles quickly. Bush, though, was able to lean on the expertise of veterans from his father's and from the Reagan administration, people like former Secretary of State, former Treasury Secretary James Baker, and former Secretary of State George Shultz, among others. So that was a big help.
Peter Mayer has been a journalist for more than four decades and served as White House correspondent for CBS News for 17 years. Peter, I thank you for adding your knowledge and viewpoints in all of this. You take care.
Thank you, Gil. Privileged to be with you.
This has been a special edition of America Changed Forever, Capital in Crisis, from the CBS Audio Network, produced by Paul Woody Woodhull and District Productive. I'm Gil Gross.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.